This paid commercial may not represent the views of Hubbard Broadcasting Incorporated or Federal News Radio. Statements and opinions of this broadcast are solely those of individual contributors or advertisers as indicated. Federal News Radio does not take responsibility for those statements or opinions and accepts no responsibility or liability for any inaccuracy, errors, or omissions reported during this program.
Welcome to Off the Shelf with Roger Waldron of the Coalition for Government Procurement. Off the Shelf gives a voice to commercial service and product companies selling in the federal market. Roger speaks to members and government officials about procurement policy trends, innovations, and debates. Off the Shelf on Federal News Radio 1500 AM. Now your host, Roger Waldron.
Today, my guest on Off the Shelf is Brian Friel. Brian is a Bloomberg Industries analyst focusing on the government contract marketplace, and today we're going to talk about that market, you know, what it looks like, where, and in particular focus on Big Macs, and not the sandwich, but multiple award contracts. Talk about that as a growth area and what's going on in terms of trends. But Brian, first, welcome to the show.
Thanks for having me, Roger.
Well, I'm looking forward to our conversation, and I think the best place to start is to just reprise or talk a little bit about, you know, the procurement marketplace over the last 2 or 3 years. We've gone through sequestrations, shut down, you know, now we have a budget deal that I guess is in place, and the, you know, devil's in the details.
Right.
But what does that meant, you know, for the trend in government contract obligations over the last 2 or 3 years?
Well, if we back it up even further, look at 2001
sure.
to 2008, we had the federal government increased its contract spending by 11% annually, a compound annual growth rate, looking at constant dollars. Beginning in 2009 through the last government full government fiscal year of 2013, there was a compound annual growth rate of -5%. So we've actually been in a bit of a down market since 2009, as the Iraq war started winding down, as the economic stimulus spending was pulled back, as base realignment and closure spending started coming down, and now as the Afghanistan war is winding down, and especially last year, we saw the effect of sequestration. Contract spending fell 11%, which is the greatest in the 30 years of data that Bloomberg government has on a constant basis.
Yeah, so in terms of like dollars and say, you know, I like the percentages, but so if I recall, it's something like around 2000, where there was about $200 billion, excuse me, or so in contract spend, and that more than doubled, right?
Yeah, we went up to about almost $550 billion, and that's just looking at unclassified, not intelligence agency spending, and just at what's reported to the Federal Procurement Data System, so purchases over $3,000.
Right, and now we've, you know, the last year, what was it? It's approximately 400.
We're down to about $460 billion.
Okay.
So almost roughly a $90 billion decline from the peak in 2009.
Okay. So the market is definitely changing. Let's put it that way. Okay. It's gotten smaller. But the area where we want to talk about today in terms of contracting is Big Macs, right?
Right.
And what are those and what are you seeing there, just to start the conversation?
Sure. So a multiple award contract, the definition that we use at Bloomberg is an IDIQ contract awarded to two or more companies. They're pre-selected for competition, and then on an ongoing basis, they compete for orders. Task orders if it's a service contract, delivery orders if it's a products contract. These contracts came into being about 20 years ago, and the most famous that a lot of people know about is SOUP, which is run by NASA, which is for printers and software and computer screens and that kind of thing. That was one of the very earliest ones. Now there's thousands of them, and they're used to purchase not just products, but also complex services, logistics services in Iraq and Afghanistan, base maintenance work, complex IT project modernization, really the gamut of what the federal government spends on. And it's really become a primary vehicle for services. About 75% now of all spending through these contracts is for services. And we've seen agencies move to them in large part because of policies that tell them that they should use these kinds of contracts to increase competition. So rather than award, say, a 10-year single award IDIQ contract to one company that's just going to get billions of dollars in orders that it then sort of works out through subcontractors. Now the model that's been pushed by Congress and that the agencies have adopted is select lots of companies up front, and then compete those billions of dollars in orders among those companies over time. And so it spreads the wealth among more prime contractors.
Yeah, I think you're right. I think the theory there is more competition over an extended period. Because I can remember, I used to date myself. I used to work back in the Brooks Act era when agencies would do these huge award to one IDIQ contracts, literally for hundreds of million dollars and lasting up to 8 years or 10 years. So essentially one company locked up a market for information technology, for example, for that agency for that period of time. And often the technology upon which the award was based, was already obsolete and is being replaced from day one of the contract. So, it seems to me, and that's, I agree with your observation that the reason these are so popular is, number one, Congress and the laws make a preference for multiple award contracts. And the underlying theory there is that they are more competitive, over an extended period of time. So, with regard to the contracts, can you talk a little bit about, some of the areas where we're seeing growth and what's going on?
Sure. So even as federal procurement spending overall declined, we've seen an increase in the share of contract dollars that are spent through these multiple award contracts. So by our estimation, about a fifth to a quarter of federal procurement dollars are spent through these MACs now. And there are north of 1,800 of these IDIQ contracts in existence across the government. Where we see growth is in a few areas, and some of them might be surprising to people. When people think of MACs, a lot of times they think of the big government-wide acquisition contracts, the one I mentioned, Soup for products.
Yeah, or Alliant
for exactly. Services. And those, in fact, are growing. And the portion of government spending on IT that is going through those contracts is rising. So, but it was only about $6 to $7 billion in 2013 out of more than $60 billion
in IT
spending across the government. So you've got a lot of consolidation on those contracts, but there's still a lot going on other contracts. And another place we see growth is at the agency level multiple award contracts. And it's become something of a status symbol for an agency. If you don't have a big central MAC of your own, you're kind of not a big player. So if you look at all of the major IT spenders, they all have their own central IT services contract. So the VA is the most recent that created its own. It's called T4.
Mm-hmm.
And when that was created, I asked the CIO at the time, why didn't he just use Alliant? And he said, the VA buys IT differently than anybody else, which I'm not sure if that's true, but that's what a lot of the agencies say. And so the IRS has its own central IT services contract. The Centers for Medicare and Medicaid Services has its own. The Army has its own. The Air Force has its own. And many of those contracts are where we're seeing growth, in part because agency executives can tell their buyers across the departments that they must use them. So T4 has become a mandatory first use contract. The Homeland Security Department's Eagle contract was a mandatory first use. For products, NetSense 2 at the Air Force is a mandatory first use contract. And so that's another place that we've seen growth. But
it's interesting, like with Eagle and the follow-on and whatnot, is my understanding, DHS is using Alliant a lot as a stopgap until it gets Eagle 2 up and running because of the protests and all that sort of thing. So it really raises the question of why create your own contract when you already have these in place? That was the whole point behind from a management perspective. And, that old saw that, my agency, we buy things differently than anybody else is, the whole purpose and the way those GWAC, IT GWACs are structured is to allow agencies to buy the way they want to buy.
Yeah.
Right. At the task order level.
Well, and if you talk to the people who back in the 90s were on Capitol Hill who helped sort of design the preference for multiple board contracts, their idea was, as you said, that because IT changes so quickly, setting up a multiple board contract where contracts can be broken up into little chunks can allow agencies to more rapidly keep up with.
Sure.
With innovation.
Consistent with like Clinger Konak and modular contracting, the contract structures would allow that. Right.
But now we have, over time, these contracts have become more complex in and of themselves. So Eagle 2 was originally sort of gotten underway. The original sort of RFI type work was done 3 years ago. and we're still not at a point where ordering is happening under it. And
sure.
So it's not in some cases because of the complexity and because of the high stakes that if you're not in this contract, you're not going to be doing work for this agency for an extended period of time. It makes companies protest their losses. And so it's kind of defeating the purpose in some cases, the original intention of these kinds
right.
of contracts.
Yeah, and we'll talk a little bit more about that when we come back, and we'll talk about, you know, the prospects for GSA's OASIS Professional Services IDIQ contract. And my guest today is Brian Friel. He's with Bloomberg Industries as an analyst focusing on government contracts. And you are listening to Off the Shelf on Federal News Radio 1500 AM.
Shouldn't a workstation live up to its billing? If yours are no longer working, there's Initiate from the Han Company. Initiate workstations are easy to order, install, and reconfigure. Components fit precisely and provide endless ways for space planners to arrange people. Initiate is also highly sustainable, helping reduce your environmental footprint. Initiate workstations, inspired by the practical needs of the workplace. Online at Han.com. That's H-O-N.com.
Welcome back to Off the Shelf on Federal News Radio 1500 AM. Today, my guest is Brian Friel. Brian is a Bloomberg Industries analyst focusing on government contracts and the federal marketplace. And, you know, Brian, when we took a break, you were talking a little about this growing trend in government contracts for multiple award IDIQs where it's taking longer and longer to award them and, you know, just sort of how it's starting to defeat the purpose of them. It's supposed to be a streamlined approach to continuing competition and that sort of thing. And, you know, what does that mean for the marketplaces? You know, one thing I mentioned as well is that, you know, for example, DHS is using Alliant. Is this something that you think will continue to grow and that may force folks to continue to look at pre-existing contracts more so?
Yeah, we see that in the data too, that Homeland Security's usage of Alliant has increased as the problems with Eagle have extended. And we've seen that in other cases where contracts have been delayed. So the Army ITES-3H,
right.
Which is a
product. I was going to bring that one up. Yeah,
that's been taking forever.
Yeah. Yes.
And so what we see—
Literally forever.
Yeah,
right.
and although it was run by the Army, the Air Force and the Navy were fairly significant users of that contract. And so we looked at what's happening to the orders, because now the Air Force and Navy cannot use that contract because the ordering period for non-Army buyers has expired. And where we see that going is to SUP
okay.
and to the schedules, to Schedule 70. And so where there are problems with recompetes for these kinds of contracts, the government-wide contracts can pull in the work. I think that's an argument for agencies to do due diligence when they're going about creating these contracts and first look to see, are there existing vehicles that can do this work? Even if we go ahead and do our own contract,
sure.
We need to know where the work can go if there are problems that make it so that we can't begin ordering when we expect to.
Yeah. So in terms of, do you see this as a trend that will reduce the number of contracts? I mean, I know you've got some data on the number of MACs that are been created in, you know, I think you said there's about 1,800 of them, but, you know, where are the trends? Are they continuing to grow exponentially? Is it leveling off? What's going on there?
You know, the reason we got into this whole MAC analysis area is because several years ago, we started getting a lot of questions from people about which are the MACs that are most used. And we discovered that the government does not have a central place where these are tracked, that there's no one at OMB or at the Pentagon that knows how many of them exist, what their names are, what's being bought on them. And
just before you continue, yeah. I have to echo that. When I was on the SARA panel back in 2005, 2007, when we did, you know, our review and report, we couldn't figure out that either. We tried to get the data. There was no good data on the number of those contracts, how much was going through them, all that. I mean, you're exactly on point
right.
there. And I don't think it's really improved at all.
Yeah, so what we did was we took a bottom-up approach, and we just started going through the federal procurement data system contract data that we pull into our system. And we just started naming the contracts and saying, okay, here are all the contracts that belong to Seaport. Here are all the contracts that belong to Eagle. And through that process, we were surprised. We didn't think it would take us, you know, more than a couple of weeks. And we're still constantly working on it and updating it. And to the point that in 2012, we found more than 1,800 of these contracts in use across the government. And that has grown, according to our data, from less than 1,200 in 2006, which is still a significant number.
Sure.
But that's quite a substantial amount of growth just in the past 7 years. Now, interestingly enough, from 2012 to 2013, we did see a slight drop. We're still above 1,800, but it didn't keep growing. And we had expected that in part because of what we talked about just now, the problems with creating new contracts and there being some understanding of that in the agencies, and in part because some agencies themselves realize that they themselves have created too many of these contracts.
Sure.
So SPAWAR is an example. They just have a tremendous number of these contracts, small with $25 million ceilings, with four prime contractors competing for some little piece of the work that SPAWAR has. So SPAWAR consolidated them all into a central contract called Pillars. And over time, as the orders expire on all those lots of little existing MACs, they will be recompeted on the central Pillars contract. And so the number of IDIQs in operation at SPAWAR will decline. And that's true in other agencies. The Army has several of these consolidations, and the Air Force and the Navy.
Right. So you're telling me the numbers should continue to either stay stable or go down a little bit over the next few years?
Yeah, I would expect them to decline. Now, the wrinkle in that is a bit definitional. So Eagle One was a very simple contract that had one pool of vendors.
Sure.
Eagle Two has multiple pools of vendors. So there's an unrestricted pool for one type of work. There's a small business set-aside pool for that same piece of type of work. Then there's a whole another set of contracts, an unrestricted pool and a small business pool. And if you count each of those as an individual MAC, then you could say that they're growing, right?
Right,
but
sure.
We tend to treat them as one program. And so if you look at it that way, they'll shrink. But those specific contracts are becoming much more complex over time. And again, that adds to the challenge of making these streamlined vehicles, because as they become more complex, just figuring out which pool to place your order in,
right,
adds time to the contracting process.
Yeah. I mean, that's a great point. And it's, you know, we're going to talk about OASIS here in a minute and talk about pools. but that sort of strikes me as it's, again, it's making it harder than it needs to be from both a contractor and government perspective. Because you're right. Really what they're doing is within one contract, you really have six or seven different distinct contract scopes for various sets of work, when, you know, the original intent for a lot of this was we'll have a very general scope of work. You know, it's got to be sufficient to be able to have competition. I acknowledge that, but you'd get a pool of contractors, and it'd be very flexible. That's the Alliant model by and large, right? You know, and you'd be able to meet requirements, and you know, it's consistent with the IT infrastructure across government. But this pool structure, the added complexity, and, you know, just even the decision which pool it goes in impacts competition, you know, whether it's your socioeconomic goals, all those sort of things. So it is like creating contracts within a contract. Is that fair to say?
Yeah. And one challenge for the companies themselves is they then have to track where is the work being competed. And if, let's say a piece of work that they might have expected to bid on in an unrestricted pool shows up as a task order, a request for task order proposals in the 8A pool, they need to have developed a relationship with at least one of the prime contractors in the 8A pool so that they can compete for the portion of the work that they think they can perform. So it adds complexity for the contractors in the large pools have to develop relationships to become subs, mm-hmm, to small business, mm-hmm, primes in the other pools.
Yeah, it's really fascinating because it strikes me as I'm searching for the words for it, but it truly is, it's almost trying to force fit, you know, an old system into a new, you know, set of contracts or something like that. I mean, it's really weird, right? When you stop thinking about the pools.
It seems to be sort of just that natural tendency of a bureaucracy,
yes,
to add rules onto existing rules.
Yeah.
And I think we can expect that like 10 years from now, maybe 5 years from now, there will be some new effort in Congress to simplify the acquisition process, which has become too complex again.
Right.
And that's just probably just something that will occur every 15 or 20 years.
Well, it's anyway. A pendulum. It's a cliche. But you know what? We never got to Oasis during this segment. So we'll start off the next segment with talking about Oasis, what that may mean for the professional services marketplace. My guest today is Brian Friel. Brian is an analyst with Bloomberg Industries. He focuses on the government contracts or the federal marketplace. And you are listening to Off the Shelf on Federal News Radio, 1500 AM.
This is an important time for the federal government, a chance for agencies to do things differently. How will you help shape your future? Turn to Deloitte. With our private sector insight and public sector experience, we'll help you rethink, reduce, and restructure, and turn resolve into results, so you can see what's possible and make it happen. See how at Deloitte.com/federal. Wherever you need to go, Deloitte sees you there.
Welcome back to Off the Shelf on Federal News Radio 1500 AM. Today, my guest is Brian Friel. Brian is an analyst with Bloomberg Industries, focusing on the federal marketplace. And Brian, as promised, this segment, we're going to start off, talk a little bit about the prospects for Oasis, which is GSA's latest, I guess, government-wide contract offering that's, you know, that the Oasis small business contracts have been awarded, and they have been protested.
That's right.
Surprise, surprise. And, you know, the Oasis large business awards have not yet been made. I assume they'll be made anytime soon now. Let's hope. And there'll probably be protest on those. To your point earlier in the show about, you know, if you get locked out of a market, you know, there's much more incentive to protest.
Oh, yeah.
So, you know, Oasis, can you first, what is it? A little bit more detail if you can. And then, you know, what you think it means for professional services across the federal government.
Sure. So one of the ways we look at the data at Bloomberg is through the Defense Department's acquisition taxonomy. And the largest category in that taxonomy of government purchases is knowledge-based services. So this is complex IT, engineering services, expertise that agencies bring in and often have sitting right beside the government workers working on the most complex projects that the government undertakes. So this has been the biggest growing area in government contracting over the past 10 years. And a great example of it is the Seaport Enhanced contract at the Navy, which by our calculation is the largest non-schedule MAC in existence. It does about $5 billion a year in obligations. It's pretty much all Navy professional services work. And the General Services Administration saw Seaport E, saw the growth in the knowledge-based services market, and realized that they couldn't attract buyers through the schedules because most of that work is being done on a cost-plus basis, and the schedules don't allow cost-plus contracting. So the Oasis contract is GSA's answer to the market need for a contract to place cost-plus task orders for complex knowledge-based services along the lines of Seaport E. I used to joke that they should have called it Landport E because it's so much like Seaport
sure.
E. That although the Navy will probably not be a major user of it, most other major agencies like the Army and the Air Force will. And the Air Force has already
publicly
signed on
right.
to use that contract. And as we talked before about all the problems that recompetes for agency-level IDIQs have been growing, Oasis will be created at a time when a lot of these very small knowledge-based services contracts, $100 million ceiling with 10 contractors or $50 million ceiling with 5 contractors, come up for expiration, and the agencies will decide, do we create a new one or do we just go use the existing contract? So I think a lot of people will be watching how the orders start flowing in on that contract from the Air Force, because the Air Force is the first agency to commit to it. And if the Air Force has a positive experience, I would expect to see more Defense Department buyers start to use it. To a lesser extent, the civilian agencies, but the civilian agencies don't do as much of this kind of work, but there probably will be some civilian agency work on it.
So, yeah, and I guess that's interesting. You mentioned those smaller IDIQ contracts. It does, you know, I'm sitting here listening to you talk about, you know, $50 million ceiling here, $100 million ceiling there. I mean, I know that's real money for most of us, but in the context of, you know, the contracts that, you know, these big IDIQ programs, they're like, that's not a big contract program. And to me, it makes no real management sense to go out and create that contract vehicle when you could do task orders off something that is already there. So,
yeah, one argument that an agency may make in terms of creating its own, is that it doesn't want to pay the fees to GSA for the use of its contract. So GSA will have to make the case back to the agency that it's cheaper for them in the long term to pay the fee to GSA than to internalize costs that in terms of contract administration.
Right. That's a great point too, and it's the cost of setting up your own contract and doing all of what it takes to do that over time versus playing, you know, a fee of some sort, some percentage or a fixed fee. I think that is a big challenge for GSA, and my guess is that, and I think the case on the Air Force is the fees were a big issue. And I think that GSA worked that out with the Air Force is one reason why they made the commitment.
That's right. The Air Force kind of got a good deal out of it and negotiated down the fees that it'll be paying. And just to get a sense of how much work may go through OASIS. So Jim Galani, who's the program manager, has estimated that the contract could see about $6 billion a year in obligations. That would be about 10% of the market currently for knowledge-based services. That's a really ambitious number.
Yes.
Because if you think about Alliant is doing about $2 billion a year in obligations, 2.5 if you count Alliant Small Business, out of a market of about $40 billion in pure IT services. So that's more in the neighborhood of 5%. Mm-hmm. But even if OASIS only captures 5% of the market, it still turns out to be about a $3 billion a year contract.
Right. So in at $6 billion a year, that would be bigger than C4D then too, right?
It would be.
Yeah. So you've touched on, and I'd like to expand a little bit, the issue with OASIS as an alternative to, the GSA schedules it is GSA's reaction to DOD's push for cost reimbursement contracting. So how do you see that impacting, there is the MOBIS schedule, PES schedule, there's schedules with labor hour rates and some other alternative pricing that's used for pricing knowledge-based services. Will it have, is GSA going to be diluting the schedules program? Is it going to, eating its own children there kind of thing? However you say that or what?
Yeah, to me, it doesn't look to me like there would be a lot of self-cannibalization
right?
And I think that's because most of this work is going to be cost plus. It will by nature should be coming off of other contracts
that were cost plus.
And one of the drivers of some of this is that the Defense Department has really put a tamp down on time and materials contracting. Time and materials is a very fast way of contracting, and so during the wars, the department allowed a lot of it. So if you needed something done really quickly, you issued a time and materials order on an existing IDIQ and let the work be done. Now that the wars are coming down and the department has more time to step back and evaluate its options before issuing an order, the push is really on to limit the TNM. So one possible thing we could see is stable usage of contract schedules like MOBIS, maybe even a slight uptick. In that MOBIS and other GSA schedules can be a sidecar to an order on a GSA contract. Mm-hmm. You see that on Alliant, the largest order on Alliant is the State Department's IT modernization program called Vanguard. The central prime integration order is on Alliant. It's a $2.5 billion 10-year order with SAIC, but there are sidecar orders on the schedules related to that. For the purchase of equipment.
Right? Sure.
And there's some sidecar orders on Alliant Small Business and on 8A Stars and on some other vehicles. DynCorp actually recently won a sidecar GSA schedule order related to that program. And so you could see the same kind of usage of the schedules in conjunction with OASIS going forward for knowledge-based services.
Yeah, and that's a great point. I guess part of GSA strategy, right? They've got a suite of contract vehicles, and how they complement each other, right? I mean, in the long run. But right now, Brian, we do have to take our last break. But when we come back, we'll be talking more to Brian Friel. Brian is with Bloomberg Industries and is an analyst to focusing on the federal marketplace and government contracts, in particular Big Macs. And when we come back, we're going to talk a little bit. We've talked a little bit about knowledge-based services, and that is the number one category in terms of Mac sales in fiscal 2013. We're going to talk a little bit about some of the other areas and the key contract vehicles that people need to be aware of. And you are listening to Off the Shelf on Federal News Radio 1500 AM. Welcome back to Off the Shelf on Federal News Radio 1500 AM. Today, my guest is Brian Friel. Brian is a Bloomberg Industries analyst focusing on the government contracts marketplace and does a lot with Big Macs, and I'm not talking the sandwich. I had to say that once during the show, Brian. I apologize for that, but, okay. You know, I just can't help myself. So, and when we took the break, we had talked a little bit about Oasis, and I want to get into the other categories where you see growth in terms of Mac sales. But first, can you just give a quick snapshot for the schedules program, like where it is currently and, you know, what the trends are there? Just because that's the biggest Big Mac there is out there in a certain sense when you talk about just multiple word contracts generally.
That's right. And if you just look on the IT Schedule 70 in and of itself, it's between $12 and $16 billion a year. So it's way bigger than the largest non-schedule Mac, which is C40 with about $5 billion. Now, the way I see non-schedule Macs vis-a-vis Schedule Max is that the schedules have largely sort of held their own in the market. So they haven't fallen off dramatically as a percentage of overall spending, but they just haven't grown. So the growth has been in the non-schedule Max. The GSA schedule is generally averaging around $40 billion a year, a bit down more in 13 because of sequestration.
Sure.
But as a percentage, it's still about the same. But it's basically been flat for several years.
And isn't the VA schedules are about $10 billion? Is that right?
The VA schedules are about $10 billion, and they've grown at a more rapid rate, largely because the Congress has given more benefits to veterans, and
sure,
a lot of that comes through the VA schedules, which is largely for medical purchases.
Yep. And so even though and the irony is, right, if they've sort of held steady, as overall dollars have gone down, even though they haven't really grown at GSA per se, they're a larger percentage of the overall spend, right? Because the spending's gone down, but the number stays the same. Am I doing my math right there, Brian? I mean, you're the math guy, not me.
Well, it's a little bit too much to say that they've held their own, because there's been some erosion. But,
sure.
But basically, they've held their own.
Yeah. Okay. So, you know, they're in that $40, $50 billion range, you know, 40 for GSA and then another 10 for VA. And you mentioned IT, that's the biggest category. Is there another category that's big? Is it knowledge-based services or what in terms of schedules?
Yeah, within knowledge-based services, there's MOBIS, right? And that's really the largest schedule outside of the IT Schedule 70. Some interesting particular growth areas over the past couple of years is debt collection services has been a substantial growth area in the last couple of years through the schedules, largely because the 2010 Affordable Care Act had a provision that sort of deprivatized student lending and made
sure
it a largely direct lending program. And so all the servicing is now executed through government contracts. And so the education department's debt collectors are procured through the
schedule. Sure, so the schedule program, okay.
And another notable growth area is in the satellite communications area, and that's because GSA teamed up with the Defense Information Systems Agency, which is DOD's central IT shop, and created the CompSatCom program.
Mm-hmm.
And that program has a similar structure to what we talked about before, a set of non-schedule IDIQs with some special set-aside areas within the Schedule 70 program. And combined, both of those programs have grown over the past few years as DISA and GSA have consolidated work on those programs.
Okay. Do you know the number there? What that?
I don't have it off the top
okay.
of my head.
That's okay.
But you can check BGov.
Okay. We can check. Hey, there's an ad right there. So let's talk more generally too now, because I also want to get your thoughts on small business and what the impact is on the Max on small business. But first, just in terms of the overall categories, not just schedules, but just overall categories, and where the Max sales fall. We talked about knowledge-based services being number one, technology services are number two in total spend. You know, are there other key growth areas or areas that folks would find of interest?
Well, there's facility related services, and this includes security guard type work. This was growing for some period of time particularly overseas, as the State Department and the Defense Department turned to private contractors to provide personal security. That's tapered off a bit over the past couple years. There's logistics services, again, a major growth area related to moving people and equipment in and out of the war theaters. And that's been going down, but there's an interesting case within the logistics services area at the Army. There's the Army has its own contract called Eagle, and this is for logistics work. And the idea there is that the Army will be combining 4 or 5 existing MACs along with about 800 little single ward IDIQs around it for base maintenance services and logistics work at U.S. bases. And that the first few orders have started to be awarded under that program.
Okay. So with regard to, let's just give some numbers of those ones. Like, so knowledge-based services, how much was approximately in billions spent under MACs, you know, whether it's Seaport East, MOBIS, or, or other contracts? So what is it, about $27 billion, something like that?
That's right. And that's about 41% of the total spending by the federal government in that area. So, and in technology services, it's more than half of the spending goes through.
So it's about seven, yeah. Okay. Mm-hmm. Facility-related services, what's that, about $8 billion or something like that?
About 15% of the overall, so not as concentrated on IDIQs as technology services and knowledge-based services are.
And is healthcare IT, or healthcare IT, I'm saying it right, just make sure. Is that a big growth area that is going to be through MACs, or are there going to be separate contracts? What are you seeing there?
It'll be a mix. So we saw the Centers for Medicare and Medicaid Services put most of its work related to Affordable Care Act implementation through IDIQs, through MACs. The VA has been putting most of its work related to electronic health records and that kind of work through MACs. But perhaps the largest or most interesting technology procurement of the coming decade is the defense health systems modernization. And while some of that might be executed through MACs, it's most likely that we will see a kind of an old school single award systems integration contract for that, in part because there's a bit of a lesson that agencies have seen coming out of the healthcare.gov situation at CMS, that sometimes it makes more sense to hire an outside systems integrator rather than attempt to systems integrate yourself.
Yeah. And you mentioned logistics services as a category, which is about $5 billion. And it's interesting because it segues right to the next topic. As you talked about the Army, you know, consolidating all kinds of smaller contracts and some of its bigger contracts into one big contract. That raises a question of, you know, what's the impact on small business of these big MACs?
So when we first started doing this work, a lot of small businesses talked to me and said they were really fearful of these programs because they felt that the large businesses that had been winning all their work previously kept winning it just in smaller chunks through task orders.
Sure.
But what we saw in the data was that small businesses actually have been outperforming for some time on MACs relative to non-MACs. And that has intensified since 2010, when Congress passed the Small Business Jobs Act, which explicitly determined that more work should be set aside through multiple work contracts and through schedules. And we saw for the first time the share of obligations through MACs go above 30% for small businesses in 2013. And an example of that is Seaport E. As I said, the largest non-schedule MAC, the 52% of the orders awarded in 2013 by total potential value were awarded to small businesses, and that's tended to be more in the 25 to 30% range in prior years. And we see those similar trends on specific contracts throughout the government.
Yeah, well, that's a great point. The Small Business Jobs Act of 2010, allowing for set-asides at the task order level, has a huge impact. And I also think something you touched on earlier, the increased complexity, creating the pools within, you know, and contracts within contracts, and having portions at the contract level set aside as a, you know, as a channel for small businesses, whether it's 8A or whatever. So the infrastructure at the contract level is facilitating it, as well as the ability to set aside at the order level.
Right. And it's worth pointing out that you don't have to create that contract structure because you can do the set aside
exactly
at the order level. And so CPORT is a great example of that. It does not have pools. It's a rolling admissions contract that will always
kind of like a GSA schedule. I'm just saying.
Right. And so it's a bit redundant that agencies are doing both.
Right. And that's, I mean, we have to finish up, but that's the thing that will be interesting to see how OASIS works out, because this pool whether the pool structure makes it harder than it needs to be at the task order level or not, or, you know, that's will be interesting to see how it plays out for customer agencies, because that's the way they've created it. And I think a lot of that pushes small business focus. So,
And one fact is, in this market, there are so many IDIQs that if agencies decide it's too hard to use OASIS, there are plenty of other vehicles that they can use to place their orders.
Yeah, sure. Brian, thanks. I want to thank my guest, Brian Friel. He is with Bloomberg Industries and an analyst focusing on the federal market, in particular Big Macs, for joining me today. And you've been listening to Off the Shelf on Federal News Radio 1500 AM.
You've been listening to Off the Shelf with Roger Waldron of the Coalition for Government Procurement. If you missed any part of this program, you can hear the entire show or any of our weekly programs anytime at federalnewsradio.com. Off the Shelf, only on Federal News Radio 1500 AM and federalnewsradio.com.